You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Is the hangover effect real? We're about to find out. On that note, welcome in to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on all things Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. As we chat this Thursday evening, it's an off day for the Rockets entirely. No games until Saturday night, primetime ABC against the Lakers, albeit without LeBron James. Rockets are not even practicing today, getting the day to get right, certainly physically, after playing an enormous workload, 53 minutes last night, 48 plus overtime, their third game in four nights, worn down, but on top of it, losing a game that they led by 8 with a minute 9 left in regulation, and by 7 after hitting the reset button, getting off the mat, then led by 7 with under 90 seconds left in overtime, and lost that one as well, in a brutal 145-142 overtime loss to the Brooklyn Nets. On paper, it's not one of the worst losses of the season in that without Clint Capella, without Chris Paul, with Eric Gordon limited to just 21 minutes coming off the knee injury, the Rockets, even with James Harden scoring 58, simply don't have an overwhelming talent advantage against a young and scrappy Nets squad led by Spencer Dinwiddie last night, an astounding 33 points off the bench, and a team that right now is 23-23 and on the inside of the playoff picture in the Eastern Conference. So certainly you tip your cap to them. They earned it. But as far as the Rockets are concerned, it is a gutting loss and one in which I believe the emotional toll and pushing past that hangover effect that I led off discussing is going to be more important than simply getting physically right, because they've been shorthanded for a while. And unfortunately, with Clint Capella out for likely the next 4 to 6 weeks, it's not like they're going to be at full strength anytime soon. I think they're used to being shorthanded. What's tough with this is that to fight that hard and then have the game slip away on multiple occasions, it's tough, and there's no other way to look at it. That said, the Rockets have already climbed off the mat several times this season, certainly within the game last night, as mentioned, but they were 1-5, they're 11-14. They've shown a lot of mental resilience all season long, so who's to say that they can't do it yet again, especially with a couple of days to clear their heads and Thursday getting away from basketball entirely. So as far as this show here at Locked On Rockets, all we can do is turn the page, look forward to the coming weeks, which hopefully you get Chris Paul back fairly soon. Eric Gordon played 20 minutes last night, waiting to hear his availability, left early, but the Rockets called it general soreness. So based on that, I'm anticipating him being available, at least for a limited amount of time, on Saturday against the Lakers. So as we turn the page from the Brooklyn debacle and try to spin it forward as far as what's ahead for the Rockets, the number one item on the agenda, as I see it, is the absence of Clint Capella, which is forcing a lot of changes for Houston on both the offensive and defensive ends of the floor. Really, other than James Harden, Capella is probably the most fundamental piece to what they do because he's so irreplaceable. There's no one else that can provide that level of presence around the rim, certainly as a rim protector on defense, but also offensively as their only true role man, putbacks, easy baskets. They don't have any of that, and the immediate impact, certainly you could see the driving lanes for the Nets last night, but also the Rockets put up an NBA record, shattered the previous record at 61 with 70 three-pointers last night. So as far as how the Rockets move beyond what happened against Brooklyn, certainly I think priority one is clearing their heads. But also tactically, I think there were some things that the Nets were able to exploit throughout the game, which kept them within striking distance for those two crazy Spencer Dinwiddie-led closing flurries in regulation and in overtime. And I think the biggest difference, even more so than losing Chris Paul, is suddenly being without Clint Capella. Because in some extent, I think they're used to being without Chris Paul. They are not used to being without Clint Capella, and that's a big change for this team over the past two seasons. Well, one guy that is very good at understanding the X's and O's and also wrote a great piece this week on the absence of Clint Capella and how the Rockets can compensate for that is my friend Ali Bajani of The Athletic. Great Rockets writer there, one of the best film study gurus in the business. So rather than me try and explain what it's like without Clint Capella. I'm going to let Ollie, the man himself, do it and get him connected right here at Locked On Rockets. Ollie, how are you, my friend?
Good, Ben. How are you, man?
Doing as well as can be expected after that brutal result last night. I wasn't in the locker room after the game because I had to tape the post-game show, one of the more depressing ones I've done in a long time. I know you were there and were. Before we get into the Clint Capella storyline, which I think had a lot to do with the result, just set the scene, what the vibe was like, because I imagine, I know they said all the right things about moving on, but that had to be one of the more gut-punch losses that they've seen certainly this year, but I'd say really even the last couple of years, right?
Yeah, and I know Gerald was the first one to talk in the locker room. And when we asked him, you know, what do you do after this loss? He's like, you just got to move on. And I think that's the mindset that they have, is that they're already going through so much in terms of injuries, in terms of all this stuff going on. And you can't be dwelling on stuff like this, especially when you're locked into such a heated playoff race. And that's the vibe I definitely got, is that, yes, of course, they wanted to win. They're clearly tired. But they're going to continue to move on. They have a game on Friday. And, you know, I'm sorry, Saturday. And I think one thing that's very interesting to see moving forward is, can they continue to integrate these new guys in? And Ben, I know you talk about postgame, but I think the biggest story besides the game yesterday was the tone, you know, pregame with Coach D'Antoni and the way he talked about Daniel House's situation and how when the point was brought up about the playoffs and how he may not be able to play if they make it based off the contract situations. And he was just like, I'm going to play whoever I have to play. And I think it caught him a little off guard that could have also happened. And I also think it goes to a deeper problem that there's so many new guys who are here this season that his task and his coaching staff's task of getting all of these guys up to speed and playing the system. You know, offensively, it's great, freedom-wise, but defensively, something they're not used to at all, switching 1-5, everything, it takes time. And I think we're seeing the results of that, you know? And I definitely do think that these next, you know, few weeks without Clint are going to be a lot like what we saw yesterday. They're going to have some spurts where they play good defense just because the energy is there. They're able to secure the rebound and go. But they're also going to have lulls, like in that fourth quarter in overtime when they give 60 points. And I really do think that these guys realize it's going to be a dogfight every single night just because of how undermanned they are. And you could definitely see that in the locker room yesterday.
One of the things that jumps out to me is how different they look without Clint Capella on both ends of the floor. And the argument that I've made, and I'm curious if you agree, is that losing Clint, I don't know that he's quote-unquote better than Chris Paul when Chris is right. But he changes the team more, his absence. Because you lose Chris Paul, you still have James Harden clearly running the offense much the same way. You have now Austin Rivers. You've got Eric Gordon as he continues to work his way back. So while Chris is really good, you can take Chris out of the lineup. Number one, I think they're used to that because Chris has unfortunately missed some time the last 2 years. But beyond that, it doesn't fundamentally change how you do things. Without Capella as the only true presence near the bucket defensively, offensively, your only role man, the only guy that gets you the easy points, the putbacks. To me, taking Clint Capella out makes for a more striking, immediate difference than taking Chris Paul out. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I really do think now that with Austin Rivers here and Brandon Knight as fourth or fifth guy, and you have Eric Gordon, you know, they have three guys, even without Chris, who can run the offense, play off the James, be secondary ball handlers. Chris, obviously, himself, he's a number one ball handler, and he runs the offense at the second. But I think if you don't have him, you can make do for a little bit, obviously. But wait, Clint, what that does, that takes away a couple things. And I wrote about this in the piece I worked on The Athletic yesterday, where you have one guy who sets the screen so well for James. He has 4 years of chemistry with James Harden. Mm-hmm. You can't discount that. Before Clint Capella was here, and a lot of people can argue with me on this, in my opinion, the best screener that James Harden has ever played with, besides Clint now, was Donatus Mata-Unis. And why was that? Because of the chemistry they built over time, because he became a great passer. Now, Clint, albeit he's not the same passer Donatus was, but he's getting there. You know, he's improved on his short rolls to the corner. You know, all these different things that chemistry helps build. Clint has that now. And without Clint, you have guys like Chris and Hartenstein. And, you know, I personally just don't trust them yet, especially because those are younger guys, and also because of playing time, to go out there and play 4-on-3 consistently. Because when teams like Memphis did, and like the Nets did a little bit last night, will send that second guy over, you need to trust your bigs to be able to make plays. And as of right now, besides PJ Tucker, I don't know who else that can be. Maybe Gary Clark if he's playing there and then they go five out. But, you know, you need a big defensively. And if a big can't do a lot for you offensively, like Clint can, the Rockets have to go small. And that's what we're seeing now.
When they go small with starting Gary Clark, and that was a wrinkle that D'Antoni threw at us right before the game yesterday without tipping his hand until his pregame session. To me, it's a reflection of the fact that if Nene is limited to 15 minutes, it doesn't really make sense to start him because you're choosing based on that what at least 80% of the 15 minutes are going to be. At least if you bring Nene off the bench, you can pick and choose based on matchups exactly when you use them. Whereas if you start him, okay, unless you're going to pull him after 2 minutes, and what's the point of that? Then you're already dictating, okay, early in the first, early in the third quarter, this is going to be, you know, 80-90% of the time that's out there. So the Rockets went small with Gary Clark. Clearly, they don't trust Hartenstein and Chris, and for good reason at this point. So obviously, it makes them five out, as you said. They put up an NBA record 73s last night. But what I saw, and in some ways, even though it wasn't like those two stretches, blowing the 8-point lead at the end of regulation, blowing the 7-point lead at the end of overtime, it wasn't like they shot too many threes there. It was one of the Nets just making an absurd amount of shots and also a couple of dumb fouls at the end of overtime by Gerald Green and PJ Tucker. But to me, what we saw throughout the game was reflective of that dynamic, and it's that the Rockets had so much variance. They were so streaky. You go through a stretch where the threes go in, then sure, offensively, it looks really pretty and they can put up points in a hurry. The flip side is that there's zero consistency without that role man, that passing dynamic of Clint Capela that you were talking about. So I'm just curious if you can expand on that. We'll start with offense, because to me, the result, and last night it felt like was sort of appropriate in that you had this extreme streakiness. That's what happens within the game. There's just very difficult for them to have any consistency without Clint Capela on the offensive end.
And that's why the Nets went to a 2-3 zone, Ben. You know, kept two guys up high. They had three guys inside, and they kept that big inside the paint. And what that does is Rockets have no lob threat. And if you have no lob threat, that big can just stay down there and set up camp down there. And when James decides, you know what, I'm going to attack, then he can go all the way down there, but he's met by that big. And that's why we saw a little struggle in the first half. He only had 14 points. And for James, you know, yeah, for everybody else, that's a lot. But for James, you know, 14 points is still not where he usually is. And we're so accustomed to seeing the last few weeks. And so I really do think that 2-3 zone, you know, threw them off a little bit. But I think the second half, they made an adjustment really well where they started going to that 1-2 pick and roll a lot more. And what that does is when you're a defense and you're playing zone and you're playing a 2-3 zone with two guys up top, you don't want to participate in defensive coverages, because a guy like James Harden can force a switch and then, you know, dance and do what he does with the dribble and, you know, shoot those step back threes. But by involving the two guys up high, he was forcing those actions and he was creating miscommunication, and he got going in that third quarter with those 23 points. And I really do think that that's how they're going to have to play from now on. They're going to get the 2-3 zone, but you're going to see instances where the defense is going to keep the big back. And when that happens, James is going to have to decide, am I going to, you know, be able to get the switch? If I can't get the switch, am I going to have to go inside, shoot some more mid-range? It's going to have to diversify his game as well, more than anything else. And I think we saw it against Memphis, but something to keep an eye on is running more ball actions with Gary Clark. Gary Clark told me post-game, and I wrote about it as well, he told me post-game against Memphis, that he plays the five. When they go small, he plays the five as the center on offense. PJ plays that five on defense. But on offense, Gary is the screener. That's a big responsibility for a guy who's a rookie, to be able to build that chemistry, to know, hey, when am I going to slip that screen? When am I going to stay a little bit longer for it so a guy has to go over me a lot more? So, you know, a lot of those things as a rookie, that doesn't happen overnight. It's going to take some time. So I think the first two games, James has, you know, gone for 50-plus points. But I think over time, we're going to see the offense settle down a lot better in the half court for guys like Gary to slow it down, to be able to execute like those facilitation plays that I talked about.
Does the return of Chris Paul help this situation at all. We assume he's just a few days away now, though we haven't gotten final clarity on that. Certainly, you're not going to look at Chris Paul as a Capella replacement, of course, but just thinking in terms of some of the predictability issues, having a guy who does excel at the mid-range and at least forcing defenses to respect another area of the floor, it's not the same as having a roll threat, a lob game by any means, but it's at least something else that the Rockets can put in their toolbox offensively that now, without Clint Capella, might make them a hair less predictable. That's my initial read on it. Do you see it in similar terms?
Yeah, and you know, before Chris Paul got injured, the Rockets were sprinkling in more mid-range plays out of their pistol formation. So if you watch Rockets basketball, they run a lot of very similar. They don't run a lot of plays. They run a lot of action.
Mm-hmm.
And the pistol action is involving two guards to start the possession. And with Chris, what they were doing is was unlike with James, where he gets the ball, the dribble handoff, and he needs to shoot a three or attack. Chris would start the play inside the perimeter. And, you know, do a lot more actions where he would get more mid-range shots or he would come off some pin down. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that. And what that does is, without a lock threat, if you get Chris coming off of those screens and a big is already stepping up high, Chris can knock those down and keep the defense more honest. And that creates some of those short bounce passes for guys like Nene and Hardenstein to be able to hopefully get some baskets around the rim. So I think we'll see that a lot more. But, you know, then to your point, I think defensively is what Chris will make the biggest impact.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is when you play small, you're going to switch everything, obviously, like the Rockets do. They play four-guard lineup. I wish I could go back and look at the numbers. They probably play four-guard lineup for a majority of that game, maybe 30, 40 minutes of that game. And what I mean by that is they have four, the coach D'Antoni calls it four smalls and one big. And you have Gerald Green, for example, Eric Gordon, James Harden, James Nunnally even played that role yesterday, Austin Rivers. You have four of those five guys on the floor. And then either have P.J. Tucker or Nene or whichever big they have setting the screen. However, when you do that, that's fine on offense because you're playing five out or if you're playing 1-4 flat with James. But on defense, if you can't stay in front of your man, what does that do? That throws off all of your switching coverages because this team is not like it was last season where it has the length to recover, right? So when you're already going smaller and you're switching everything, it's very likely that some of these guys are going to lose contain or lose their on-ball pressure defense and allow a guy to slip past them. And when that happens, that tests the Rockets' rotations. And then, as we both talked about yesterday, they're not the same team they were last season. That's creating a lot more of these paint opportunities. That's what the Nets got hot in that first quarter, because Coach D'Antoni even said Eric Gordon hasn't practiced in a few weeks. You combine that with the fact that they're already going small. Nobody can stay in front, and that just creates all the situation where it's helter-skelter, everybody's rotating, but nobody knows how to help the helper, and you're getting all these wide open threes.
Finishing up our interview with The Athletic's Ali Bajani, talking largely about his recent piece this week titled Rockets Film Room, How Houston Might Compensate After Losing Clint Capella. You can find it at theathletic.com. Strongly urge you guys to subscribe if you have not already. You can also follow Ali on Twitter at Rockets_insider. Ali, I know one thing that's been a pet peeve of yours this season is this idea that the Rockets don't have rim protection, especially after they made the switch in about early December to stop switching 1-5, to drop Capella and Nene. It coincided with Nene's return as well. And to some extent, they have been successful at protecting the rim, especially since they made that switch. I know overall they're still not a good rebounding team, but certainly Capella individually, one of the better rebounders in the league. He's got the presence, the athleticism, whatever you want to call it. And that dynamic has played fairly favorable for them. That also coincided with this stretch in which, even with last night's game, the Rockets, 25-19, they've won 14 of their last 19. But without Capella now, I know your prior contention was they didn't have a rim protection issue. It was about the weak side rebounding, not boxing out, and then getting in compromised positions because of that. Now, all of a sudden, it does look like they have a rim protection problem. The switching that you just talked about, 1-5, well, one reason they have to do that is because there's no one that they can really drop. They have to defend on the perimeter and trust that guys are going to make the rotation, or else they're just going to be these lanes. Is that anything that you can solve while Clint Capella is out, or are you just basically doomed in this stretch to acknowledge that, hey, the rim protection isn't going to be there, and you're going to sink or swim based on how well these guys can execute the true 1-5 switching scheme?
Yeah, Ben, and before I get started on that answer, I just want to let the audience know that when Clint Capela even started dropping back, his defensive percentage that he allowed at the rim, so the field goal percentage for the opposing team around the rim, was 60%. Now you're like, wow, 60%, that's very high. I agree, this is very high. But the context of the situation is that the Rockets are one of the better teams in the NBA at defending the three-point line.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to let you get off as many three-point shots. They're going to funnel you inside towards Clint. Now, if you look at the stats as well, he defended around 9 attempts per game at the rim. That's one of the highest amounts in the league. And when that happens, you're obviously going to get a lot more shots up, and more times than not, players made them 60%. But another key stat in comparison is Gary Clark. Gary Clark, in terms of as a rim protector, allowed 60% as well around the rim, albeit on 5 attempts a game. And the reason I'm making that comparison is, and this is not an answer to your question, without Clint, you're going to have to trust that help side defense to rotate over. And right now, besides P.J. Tucker, because he's going to switch probably onto the perimeter, Gary Clark is the Rockets' best weak side shot blocker. And when that happens, at least the Rockets can know if we play Gary Clark and he steps up because of his size, because of how smart he is when he goes up and doesn't usually go into the offensive player draw a foul, he can create some hesitation on behalf of the ball handler. And I think we're going to see that a lot more. I think the Rockets are going to try to put them in a position where Gary Clark is that weak side helper, P.J. Tucker is just playing the five on defense and trying to, you know, butt heads down there and do stuff. But when P.J. Tucker is there and Gary Clark rotates over, somebody has to help the helper. And what I mean by that is, if Gary Clark's rotating over, who's going to help him secure that defensive rebound? That has to be another guard. You already have two bigs down there who are trying to, you know, cover the blown assignments. And that's where the Rockets' biggest issue has come. And how do you fix that? You fix that with effort. You fix that with the ability to say, hey, if they're driving inside and my two big guys are going to block out for me, I have to go in there and grab that defensive rebound. There's been way too many times this season where guards and their three-guard lineup have just coasted. They've let the perimeter guys, you know, free. And those perimeter guys have just crashed the glass, got the offensive rebound on the long rebound, and got another 24-second shot clock possession, or if one starts 14 seconds, and then they're not going to, you know, gut-wrenching three. And that has to be fixed, especially when you go small. The effort has to be there on the defensive end, especially on the weak side glass. And it's probably been the most inconsistent part of this Rockets team.
And I assume it's especially a big deal Saturday night when you're going up against a Lakers team that I know they don't have LeBron, but they're very long. And then at the five, they're going to be playing Tyson Chandler and JaVale McGee. So I assume, given that contrast, the effort is going to be what matters most, right?
Yeah, and you know, let's not forget, Lakers may be struggling heavily without LeBron James, but they're still they're the third best defensive rebounding team in the league over the last few weeks. They are a great rebounding team. They will get the rebound, but the Rockets need to stay consistent. I think Coach D'Antoni said the best thing when Clint went out is that you don't have to win the rebounding battle without Clint. But you can't lose by 10 plus. You have to be either right above them or right below them. You have to be around that same rebounding total. You can't be losing like they did against the Nets, entering the fourth quarter by 9, because as we know, that's what cost them the game at the end, because it's all offensive rebounds off the free throws, offensive rebounds off these long misses. Can't happen, especially when you're a small team.
Last question for you. I know we're just one game into the James Nunnally era. I'm laughing as I say era, of course, but he is going to play. What is the difference between Nunnally and Daniel House? I know Nunnally's known as a 3-and-D type, but his defense is a bit less aggressive. It looks to me more cerebral race than House. He doesn't have that quick twitch that Daniel does. Just explain, because even though I know Gordon is starting at the three, when it comes to the minutes, Nunnally in for House with this ongoing contract dispute is the most apples-to-apples comparison. For better or for worse, what's the difference in those two guys and their styles?
The biggest thing is size and athleticism. When you have Daniel House, what position he plays, he says he's a bigger guard. He doesn't call himself a wing, doesn't call himself a forward, calls himself a bigger guard. And I think that athleticism, along with how much bigger he is in size and frame, is what really stands out to me about Nunnally versus House. And I think the Rockets will definitely miss that, because House was in the 95 percentile in transition. Now, why is that important? When you're a team like the Rockets, who's smaller now, and you have to run in transition, which helps spark that third quarter turnaround, you have to have guys who flank the sidelines really well in transition, because then that really collapses the defense and spreads them out from side to side. And then James can take over, he can drive inside, he can get easy layers because no rim protection is there. Now, without House, Nelly's responsibility is going to be, all right, I'm not going to be the first one on the floor like House, but I sure as hell have to try my best, run to the corner, and set up so that guy on the weak side can't leave me. And opposing teams know from the scouting report that he can shoot the ball really well, and if he's wide open, he's going to knock it down. He has a very quick release. You talk to scouts about his release, they know that it's very high, and once he gets it up there, it's a quick shot. And so the Rockets really like his ability to shoot, especially the hand space and with that quick trigger. And that's definitely that's a little different from House. House was getting there. His confidence was much better. He had a much quicker trigger in transition. I think Nelly is going to give even a quicker shot to them, and especially in that half court. And I think once Nelly gets more comfortable, he'll play a lot better. But they're going to really miss House defensively as well. Ben, you were there when I asked Nelly yesterday, have you ever played in a switching scheme before? And he said, yeah, a lot of people don't know, but in Europe, the last two seasons, I played in a switching defense. I switched to 1-5. And, that's why the Rockets played them yesterday in overtime, is because they were without Eric Gordon. They need another guy who can switch and shoot, and he fits the bill. He has the experience. But that being said, this is the NBA. There's athletic guys everywhere. He was beaten off the dribble a few times there, which gives me a lot of concern. So technically, he's fitting right in, Ben, where yeah. There's like other guys in the rotation where they get beat off the dribble on switches. But, in all seriousness, I really do think that he just gives a different skill set. He is taller. He's like 6'7", Troy Daniels. I think that's a good comparison. Yeah. When you're looking at James Nelly, 6'7", Troy Daniels, who can shoot the ball. The key is now, can he stay focused on the defensive end enough where he doesn't get beat enough, where he can be serviceable? And I think if he does that, he's going to see like minutes like he did yesterday. Because D'Antoni literally said it yesterday. They're still learning about who he is as a player. If he plays well like Austin did, he'll play 40 minutes. If he doesn't, he'll play less. And I think D'Antoni's very serious when he said that. And it's going to be about whoever's available. And we both know James Nelly will be available in the rotation in the foreseeable future. He plays well and he shoots the ball and he doesn't give up shots like he did yesterday. He's going to see increasing playing time.
Good take. Folks, he's Ali Vachani. You can follow him on Twitter at Rockets_Insider. And you can read his work with The Athletic, where he writes about the Rockets at www.theathletic.com. Ali, thanks so much for the time, bud.
Thank you so much, Ben.
Good stuff there from Ali Vachani. And to his point about Nunnally and the man defense, yeah, the defining possession when the Rockets were up two with under 40 seconds left in overtime, which ended with a Dinwiddie three-point play, got fouled after making a five-footer. PJ Tucker slid over way too late. I was frustrated by the Tucker foul because it was unnecessary, but the defense collapsed because Dinwiddie simply beat Nunnally off the dribble. There was nowhere near enough resistance. Now, I know it's one game. He was nervous. Also, I'm sure he's fatigued, not just the minutes, but flying from San Diego to Houston. It's been a whirlwind. But yeah, Daniel House is a more athletic player. Now, Nunnally is a little longer. He's certainly very cerebral. He's intelligent, but he doesn't have that explosiveness. So on top of everything else, that's going to be a transition for the Rockets as well. And a season that really, as Ali said leading up the top, the biggest problem, it's not even so much X's and O's at this point. It's that you have so much of a different supporting cast from week to week that it's really tough to build a continuity. The switches, the trust offensively, the switches on the defensive end, that if you don't know what your teammate's going to do, it's too easy for things to break down other than James Harden going Superman mode. And last night, even when he scored 58, it still wasn't enough. And to some degree, I do think it's reflective of the other issues surrounding this basketball team. Also, one final note before we sign off, Ali just texted one thing that he wanted to emphasize but forgot to. Of Jared Allen's 20 points and 24 rebounds last night, 18 and 18 of those, an enormous chunk, came in the 29 minutes that the Rockets played without a center. So in terms of the absence of Clint Capela, and if they go small like they did last night starting Gary Clark, guys like Jared Allen may feast, and there's not a lot that you can do about it until you get Clint Capela back. That's just the way it's going to be. And with the Lakers looming Saturday with Tyson Chandler and JaVale McGee up front, yeah, it's going to be a challenge. And they haven't played well of late, but a big quality rebounding team, it's going to be tough, especially for a Rockets team that on top of their obvious physical deficiencies is now probably at least a little bit emotionally reeling as well. Don't see how they wouldn't be. Anyway, I think that's enough talk for one Thursday off day, so this is where we'll break it. As always, thanks to you guys for tuning in, especially if you're wanting to talk more Rockets basketball on one of the more downer days of the year when you consider how brutal that loss last night was. Thank you so much for continuing to tune in with us. If you want more content even before our next episode, the best place to get it is on Twitter. I'm on there at Ben Dubose. Ollie is on there at Rockets_insider. Our show is on there at Locked On Rockets. And also don't forget, we've got a Locked On NBA Net Twitter and Instagram handle. That's the curated feed from our Locked On podcast networks across the NBA, other experts like myself and in other cities covering their teams as well. And we've got, of course, a team with Locked On Lakers if you want to see what those out in LA are saying about the Rockets before Saturday night's primetime game, Rockets-Lakers, 7:30 at Toyota Center on Saturday. For now, though, this is where we'll leave off. As always, thank you for listening. If you want more episodes, of course, you can find it in our archives, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify. But on top of listening to those, please subscribe and leave five-star reviews. That's how we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also, use your smart speakers. If you got one of those for Christmas or if you use various voice assistant providers, you can just say play podcast Locked On Rockets. You can find our most recent episode there as well. So with those plugs complete, this is where we'll wrap it. Again, enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Hope you have a great start to your weekend. And we'll be coming back and talking more Rockets very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily discussion of Houston Rockets basketball.